Right, right, she's here, she's here. She emerged from behind the curtains and drew them closed behind her. She wore a short skirt and all the makeup that her mother owned. Right, now everybody, shh. Everyone adjusted in the creaky chairs, and people who hadn't been speaking still put a finger over their lips. A few people practiced a smile. It flickered uncomfortably and left their faces. Leek switched off the overhead light, and the room was in sudden darkness. Outside, there was the sound of a black hackney mounting the curb and the sound of the grumbling diesel engine being cut off. Heavy doors closed, and the gate was unlatched. Over it all was a happy clack-clack-clack of thin, proud high heels. The glass living room door opened and silhouetted a woman in the lit hallway. The room erupted with a hearty, "Surprise!" and cut her off mid-sentence. Some of the older men had been taken a draw on their fags when she entered, and having missed their cue, they added a weak refrain of,
"Aye, surprise right enough, hen."
Shuggy rushed straight up to her.
"Mammy, do you want a pineapple stick? They are to die for."
Agnes fell back against the doorframe, and her hands shot to her painted mouth. She was dressed as though for a night at the opera, but in reality, she had spent the afternoon playing the buy one, get one at the Ritz Bingo Hall. Eugene's blue eyes peered tentatively over her shoulder. There was chapel in his stern face, and he couldn't help but look down his nose at the ragged bands sat around the place. He stepped into the room and nodded solemnly, as though he were at a wake.
"What's all this, then?"
asked Agnes. Her eyes were wide and swivelling, trying to take in the room. She had never seen some of these faces outside the old merchant's offices in Dundas Street. It was all somehow disconcerting.
"Happy birthday," said Leek.
"What are you talking about?"
Agnes was still turning about the room.
"It's your first birthday. Mary Doll phoned to warn us. She told us it was important to celebrate on the road to recovery."
Leek was beaming from ear to ear. He pointed at a tiny brown-haired woman sucking on a cigarette down.
"It's been a whole year that you've been sober."
"It's true. Leek's been counting," added Shuggy.
"You've been counting?" asked Agnes.
"Yes,"
said both boys at once. Shuggy took a tattered paper calendar from the sideboard. Little pages hung below a watercolour picture of the Immaculate Shrine at Lourdes. He leafed through a half dozen pages that Leek had marked off with small crosses. People started to mill about the small front room, glad of the chance to get up off the hard chairs. Agnes swung from face to face, tearily receiving their hugs and letting them kiss her cheek with their blessings. Shuggy supervised the opening of the swollen bottles of ginger. He poured the sticky acid fizz into paper cups. Shona handed Eugene a bright green cup of limeade, and he looked down into it like it was very foreign.
"I've never heard of this pithead place afore,"
said one of the Wednesday night women. Mary Doll was small and reed-like, as though the drink had whittled her away like a piece of soft carving wood. Her cheeks were sunken in under her big chestnut-brown eyes, and her dark hair sat on her rotted frame like a borrowed wig. Agnes had been silenced when she first learned that the woman was only 24. She had touched her hand to her heart and heard Lizzie whisper that there is always someone worse off than you are. Agnes cupped the little woman's hand in her own.
"I've been praying for you. Any luck with your wains?"
Mary Doll lit up, and the youth in her eyes became clear and new again.
"Did I tell you already that my youngest boy is just starting the school?" "You must have been proud. We children look just smashing, all done up in their blazers and tie."
A shadow crossed Mary Doll's face.
"Aye, he did that. I only managed to see a wee photograph, but I was sure him phoned him that night. He was so excited." Are they still with your granny?
Aye.
She'll still no let me near them.
Just the thought of being separated from her boys made Agnes want to squeeze them close. It was enough that she had lost Catherine because of the drink.
There was a time I thought you'd never stop the shakes.
Have faith, then.
Your granny will come around.
Aye, I hope so,
whispered the thin woman, not at all convinced.
It's a lovely photo, right enough. I bought a nice frame for it and put it on the wall.
A man stood up from one of the borrowed chairs. Monday to Thursday, Peter was the same age as Agnes, but looked more the age of her father. He dressed in light bleached denims and a thick Shetland wool jacket that had gone out of style in the days when Agnes was first married to the Catholic. The man moved with an odd, jangling gait, like he was made up of a pile of plates that threatened to teeter over. He had a gregarious, chatty way about himself, something he affected to cover his loneliness.
"Oh, Agnes," he crowed. "How does it feel to be a born again, a 1-year-old?
"To tell you the truth, I hadn't realised," said Agnes.
"Aye, well, it's nice to see your wain so proud."
Monday to Thursday, Peter pointed to Leek.
"They were keen to do a little something, you know, to keep the momentum going. Gee you a wee boost over the hump of the first year."
Eugene had been standing at the mouth of the living room door, not committing to the room, but unable to tear himself away from the spectacle of nervous bodies. Shuggy stood by the table of food, wiping the grease and sauce off the edges of the plates. He turned the plates just so, lining up fleshy chipolatas into neat arrangements and rotating the cheese so that the tops didn't dry out and crack. Eugene watched him fuss. The boy was making a decorative pyramid of paper cups when he finally looked up and saw Eugene silently watching.
"How's it going, wee man?"
asked Eugene, inching forward with his hands in his pockets.
"Fine. I was just..."
Shuggy looked at his fussy pyramid of cups and drew his hand through it like a bulldozer. Paper cups spilt all over the floor. They turned side by side, watching the party like it was a spectator sport, and trying not to look at each other.
"Quite the night, isn't it, eh?"
said Eugene, kindly ignoring Shuggy's display of homemaking and then home-wrecking.
"I suppose. I think Leek has lost his mind."
Eugene laughed.
"No, it's a grand thing to love your mother. After all, you only get the one."
He smiled, then asked abruptly,
"You know who I am, right?"
Shuggy nodded and answered in a flat monotone.
"You are Eugene McNamara. You're Colleen's big brother. You might be my new daddy."
He was looking at his shoes. "But no one asked me about that."
"Oh?"
It caught Eugene off guard.
"Well, I think it's bad mannered of a person to claim a thing like that and not even ask the boy if he wants a daddy."
"You are quite right. A gentleman should properly introduce himself to another man."
Eugene was holding his hand out for Shuggy to shake.
"I'm Eugene. Nice to finally meet you."
The boy shook it with trepidation. It was a bear's paw of a hand, one of the roughest things he had ever touched.
"Do you plan on staying long?"
"Maybe an hour or so."
"No, I meant around and about, staying together with my mammy."
"Oh, I don't know. I hope so."
"Mr. McNamara, I won't like you if you disappoint her."
For a while, Eugene said nothing. The strange little boy had stunned him to silence.
"You know, son, maybe it's time you thought more about yourself. Leave your mammy be for a while. I can take it from here. You should get out and play with some wains your own age. Try to be more like the other wee boys."
From the pocket of his dress trousers, Eugene drew out a little red book no bigger than a packet of cigarettes. It was thin and cheaply printed. He handed it to the boy, and Shuggy looked at the dog-eared cover. It read, "Free gift with your purchase of the Glasgow Evening Times." On the cover was a black-and-white picture of an old football hero. His socks looked thick and woolly. It was the Wee Red Book Guide to Scottish Football History. Shuggy looked down at the book and flicked through the yellowed newsprint pages full of old football scores. Scottish Premier League results. Gers, 122, drew 14, lost 8, 58 points total. Aberdeen, 117, drew 21, lost 6, 55 points total. Motherwell, 114, drew 12, lost 10. His face flushed with shame. Any feelings of superiority left him. "Thanks," he said, and he slipped it quickly into his pocket, like it was a dirty secret. Shuggy crossed the room to where his mother stood with the men from the Dundas Street chapter. They looked up at her like an adoring choir. The first man, Monday to Thursday Peter, supported another man by the elbow. This second man looked like he'd taken a stroke or like his motor functions had been addled by the drink. The third man was younger and broader, not yet a ruin or a shell, but his fingers were dirty with cigarette stains. This younger man was closer in age to Leek. His hair was bleached at the tips, and he was dressed in a trendy nylon anorak, but it gave him the look of a Jakey. He looked sly and light-fingered, like the pithead boys who stood outside Mr. Dolan's and used their army pockets to shoplift. Shuggy was glad he had hidden his mother's Capodimonte ornaments. Then this young man smiled. His teeth were small but straight and white. His face was handsome and healthy and kind. Shuggy felt funny inside. The football book burnt his leg. "Oh, this is my youngest, Hugh." Agnes was proudly stroking the top of his head.
"Hiya, pal,"
said the first man. He held his hand out to the boy.
"I'm your Uncle Peter."
Shuggy looked at the hand without taking it, and then looked up coldly at the man.
"No," he sighed. "You're just Peter. I am very well aware of my family tree, thank you."
"Aye. He's a bright lad, right enough," said the man, straightening up.
This close, Shuggy could see where his shaky hands had forgotten to shave. There were sore-looking patches on the underside of his chin. Agnes gave Shuggy such a hard shake that his hair fell out of its neat parting.
"What's gotten into you? Apologise to Mr...
Agnes was lost for words. A Monday to Thursday Peter fidgeted uncomfortably. She shook her boy again.
"Apologise to Peter."
"I'm sorry, Mr. Peter," he said, but his eyes were watching Eugene. Mary Doll crossed the room towards Eugene.
"I've no seen you afore. Are you with the Dundas Street group?"
"No."
"Aye. I thought I didn't recognise you."
She pulled her shiny fringe down over her eyes, and feeling better, she grinned.
"I've been sober myself for nearly 3 months now. Council just gave me a wee flat. I was on that list for nearly 4 years, mind. I'm hoping to get bunk beds for the living room soon. Then my weans can come stay."
She curled a tendril of her shiny hair flirtatiously around her finger. Eugene tried a thin smile. She took it the wrong way. Mary Doll kept pumping out private details without a pause or concern.
"I've been saving up hard, and I've already bought myself a wee colour portable and a lovely new rug. Bits and bobs, you know, this and that. I wish I had Agnes's touch, mind. She keeps a lovely house, doesn't she? She keeps herself lovely and all. Even at her worst, she was always spotless."
"That right?"
"Aye. Even at her worst, she was always neat as a pin."
She changed course, tired of talking about other women. She placed her hand on his arm.
Listen, you didn't tell me which meeting you went to.
Oh, well, I don't go to any meeting. I don't have a problem.
Oh, aye. Lucky you. Do you want mine?
She laughed. Her gums were white and anemic looking.
No thanks.
Eugene lifted his head and called over the music to Agnes. He thought she looked uncomfortable too, and wondered what her boy was saying that made her look so. He nodded his big red head, and she made her way over to the door. Eugene excused himself from the ghostly woman and led Agnes out into the hall. The hall was quiet and less smoky, and he finally let out a breath. Agnes watched as Eugene placed his hand on his money belt in a way that made her uncomfortable.
Listen, I'd better get back out there. You know, make a couple of fares before the club's all shut for the night.
Oh, yes, of course. Are you all right?
Aye, aye,
he answered too quickly. He scratched the line of hair at the back of his neck. Agnes knew lying when she saw it. She leaned forward to kiss him on the lips, but Eugene turned awkwardly and caught her on the cheek. It was light and dry, like a casual greeting between French friends. As he pulled away, she realized she was still standing with her lips parted, ready for a proper kiss that never came. It was her sex kiss, and it was unwanted. It made her feel old and dirty. She could see Colleen in him now, and too late, she changed her expression from love to hurt to one of armour.
Well, I'll phone you, all right?
Yes, please do,
she sniffed airily, folding her arms.
Well, you better get back to your...
He stumbled for words.
Your party.
She watched the door close behind him, then the jiggle of the handle as he took care to make sure it caught in its lock, like he was sealing a box. She heard the gate latch on his way out, and his voice call out to his nieces and nephews playing outside. It was a different voice than the one he had used on her. A life spent listening to the sounds of taxis told her he slammed the door of the Hackney. She could hear the engine start with a growl, and could tell he pulled away too fast. But then, reading the taxis was the easy part. From the living room, she could hear the sugary hiss of more bottles of fizzy ginger being opened. She watched her friends in the room in their loose-fitting clothes. 4 years the drink had held them stuck, like they were frozen, robbing decades from them, spinning them out of the world and sucking the literal life from them. She felt ill suddenly. Felt like she wanted them out of her house, to give her life a good bleaching. Agnes looked down at herself and felt embarrassed for being so low as to be with them. Then she felt lower for being such an unchristian cur. Along the hall ceiling floated a thick wave of cigarette smoke. Someone put on a new Top 40 record. Agnes had heard it before. The squeaky voice singer started singing, "Happy birthday, happy birthday." Agnes headed to the bathroom to fix herself up. Was she broken and stuck like them? In the mirror, a facsimile of Elizabeth Taylor looked back at her. Only now it was Liz, the vain and haughty version from the paparazzi photos on the yacht in Puerto Vallarta. Her hair was still thick, her makeup still feline. But now the hair was too black, and the makeup was too heavy. The popular colours of a decade gone by. Even her eyelids were metallic green, like oxidised copper. She took out an old tortoiseshell pick comb and fixed the curls in her hair, flattening them into wavy layers and making them smoother, less bouffant-like, less old-fashioned. She took an elastic band and pulled a mean ponytail into the back, the first one she had ever worn. It lifted her face as she wiped the heavy lipstick from her lips, the metallic gleam from her eyelids, and the pink rouge from the burst red veins. Blank as a canvas now, she drew electric blue coal under her eyes, the way she had seen the young girls on Top of the Pops wear it. When she lifted her head again, the woman who looked back at her was just the same. She was stuck like the others. It had nothing to do with the outside. She was sick for a drink then. Something. Anything. To take the woman in the mirror away. Agnes drew the old gas bill envelope out of her makeup bag and took out two of Bridie Donnelly's happy pills. Without water, she crunched, tilted her head, and swallowed them down like a baby bird. She took her time, finished her cigarette, and dropped it hissing into the toilet. As she watched it swirl down the drain, she slowly forgot what had been bothering her. She looked in the mirror again and smiled. Now she was fixed up. Chapter 22. When Shuggy came home from school on his 11th birthday, there was a shoebox sat on the top step and a black Hackney parked outside. Eugene had been cooler towards her since the party, so much so that even Leek had noticed. On the night she didn't work at the petrol station, Agnes had taken to chain-smoking by the phone and underlining pages from her 12-step book. Shuggy and Leek had lain awake those nights. In the dark, their eyes locked together as they listened to her sighing in front of the late-night television, knowing she wasn't paying attention to any of it. Shuggy missed school for 3 days. He faked constipation cramps and followed her around the house reading aloud from Danny, the champion of the world. He believed if he could fill her every moment with noise, then maybe she would stay away from the drink. He had stood outside the bathroom as she peed and told her of the pheasants that Danny tricked with sleeping pills. He climbed into her cold bed at night and read non-stop as she lay awake. When she could take no more, Agnes filled him full of milk of magnesia and was relieved when he was loosened up enough to go back to class. Shuggy sat on the doorstep and lifted the strange box onto his lap. Nestled inside, in clouds of white tissue paper, was a pair of black football boots. Shuggy slipped out of his shiny school shoes and into the studded boots. He clacked up and down the path. The boots were easily two sizes too big for him, but they looked like the same kind the boys at school wore. As he clacked around in circles, he wondered whether they made him more normal. The milk of magnesia grumbled inside, loosening his bowels. He pulled on the front door handle, but it was locked. He understood that well enough. As he waited in the shadows of the house, he was just glad that Eugene had come back around. Even a McAvenny for a father was better than his mother on the drink. He rested his ear against the door and prayed for Eugene to stay. Prayed that his mother would find strength to stay off the drink and be at peace. Then he prayed for God to make him normal for his birthday. His stomach flipped again. He was cupping one hand over his grumbling backside, and with the other he pulled violently at the door. A key turned inside the lock, and the handle jerked from his grasp. It wasn't Eugene. In the doorway stood his father. He was flattening his hair back over his pink head, and he looked down at the boy in shock.
"You home from school already?"
was all he said. After all this time. Shuggy, wide-eyed, nodded like he was simple. He hadn't seen Shug since that afternoon at Rascal's 3 years ago. Shug tucked the back of his dress shirt into his strained trouser band and nodded at the boy's feet.
"So, you like your present?"
Shuggy looked down at his feet and realised the black football boots were not from Eugene after all. Before he could answer, his father grabbed at his face and said,
"Fuck me. You're no half getting that big old Fenian nose."
Shuggy's hand flew defensively to his Campbell nose. He traced the little horse bone, the rudder-like bump that was growing there. Shaking his head in disappointment, Shug pulled out the change dispenser he used in the taxi. With a flick of his thumb, he slid out 2 20-pence pieces.
"Here, maybe if you take up the box and somebody'll break it for you."
Shuggy looked at the coins for a while, feeling more shocked than ungrateful. Shug took it the wrong way and reluctantly pumped out 4 50-pence pieces.
"Don't ask for mayor."
Grudgingly, he dropped the money into the boy's hand.
"So, are you chasing the lassies yet?"
The boy had never been asked that before. He shrugged. Shug thought of himself at 11 and took that as false modesty.
"Aye, well, maybe you're a bane man after alls, eh?"
His tongue wet his bottom lip.
"It's a grand age to be sticking yourself into a lassie's bread bin, seeing as you've got a couple mere years afore any real harm can come of it."
Shuggy could think only of Granny Lizzie's bread bin and the thick crusted loaf she had always kept in there. The way she had cut away the crusts for him and then slathered them with butter and ate them herself.
"Well, can I stay talking all day? You're spending my money quicker than I can make it."
Shug stepped around his son and groaned as he got back into the hackney. The boy watched it sink and sigh under his weight.
"Be sure to look after your mammy. Try and stop her from taking up with any Catholics, you hear?"
His father turned the engine over and drove off without a goodbye. Shuggy turned towards the quiet darkness of the house. He stepped clean out of the new boots and with a high kick sent them flying towards the peat box. He went inside and found her there, sat on the edge of his single bed. The covers were rumpled behind her, and at her feet sat a bag full of special brew. They looked at each other with the same dazed look, like they had both woken up from the same peaceful nap, like it would be a while before they felt like they had the will to form words and speak. He had heard she was doing well, or rather, he hadn't heard anything, and that was the point. It had been over a year since she had called the taxi rank, 14 months since she had screamed blue murder down the phone at the dispatcher, or since she had threatened to stick a knife in the boy and then gas herself. It had been over a year that he hadn't heard. The boy's birthday was coming up, and that would be as good a time as any to see for himself. One of the other drivers had gotten a shitload of black football boots off the back of a lorry. They'd pulled up a rental van next to the articulated truck, and while it was unloading, they stole 6 dozen pairs right there in the middle of Socky Hall Street. As nice as you like. In broad daylight. What boy didn't like football? If Agnes had a new man, he could just drop off the boots. No harm in that. If she didn't have a man, then he wanted to know why she had stopped bothering him. She had hurt his ego in an unexpected way, so into the birthday bag, he had slipped 6 cans of special brew. Shug slid down the window of the hackney and leaned his arm on the hot black metal. He watched the light catch the gold of his rings and thought how his hands looked better after a week in the sun at Joni's caravan. Everything looked better when he had a bit of colour on him. As he raced along the carriageway, he wondered if Agnes was still as beautiful as he remembered. He appreciated Joni, but she was no looker when held up next to Agnes Campbell. Joni was peace and quiet. She was even and steady and not a bit of bother. She took a drink but never got drunk, and she never cared for the bingo or fancy carpets or dreaming. Joni was a hard grafter and was content with her lot. She had little personality, but was dirty and grateful in bed, in the way that he knew plain women often were. Still, he had to admit that in the looks department, Agnes Campbell was a prize mare, and Joni was only a scrapmonger's pony. As he turned off into the colliery town, he wondered if she'd ruined her looks with a drink yet. He'd seen it before. There was a type, especially in Glasgow, women who froze and withered at the same time. Their faces shrank, sucked dry by the drink. Red lines bloomed on bony cheeks, sagging bags of sadness bloated under watery eyes. They tried to cover it all up, but they were stuck, and their faces became a museum to outdated hairstyles and heavy makeup. He wondered if she still had the light Irish eyes and the high cheeks, that soft pinkness that always smelled so clean and sweet. In the hot taxi, he smiled and felt his blood rise for her. He found himself thinking about what he would say to be able to fuck her one last time. He was glad he had taken a bath the night before. Shug had not been out this way in years. A look in the phone book confirmed it was still the exact same address. She still took his name. Bane. He smiled, thinking her too proud to go back to being a dirty common mick. He found the house easily, the glorious garden of roses, too conspicuous and too showy for this shabby pit town. The door was a different colour to the others, freshly painted in a red gloss. It looked confident, and it made him happy to see that. He knocked on the door and waited there for her to answer. From inside, he could hear the roar of a Hoover. He knocked again, and the machine went dead. He heard doors opening and cracked his best smile as the red swung inwards. Agnes always kept the windows open in summer, and the opening door sent a wind rushing through Shug's long, thin hair. As she looked down on him, she caught him trying to hold it vainly back in place over his shiny skull. The lecherous smile slipped from his face. There was no makeup on her face, and although older, she looked as fresh as when they had first met. On her cheeks were thin, broken lines, but the eyes still shone. And Shug thought how she looked as if she had just been out for a brisk walk. Her hair, dark as night, sat soft and curly on her head. It made him angry that she was looking down on his own baldness.
"There she is, the love of my life."
Agnes looked blankly down at him, her tongue rammed into the roof of her mouth.
"Well, don't look so bloody surprised."
As soon as he said it, he knew he wouldn't win her over like that. He wanted to sound light and easy, remind her of what she had been missing.
"It's been a while. Have you no missed me?"
"You've gotten fatter." His hand went from his hair to his belly.
"Oh aye, maybe. She's a good cook, that Joanie."
Agnes winced. "A well-rounded hoor, then."
"Look, I didn't come here to fight at your front door. I brought the Wayne a present for his birthday."
He held up the cheap plastic bag.
"Can I no come in?"
Agnes folded her arms across her chest like a blockade. Then she folded her face closed.
"My boy needs nothing from you."
Shug studied her for a minute and worried he might have lost her forever. He wondered, how does a fish free itself of a hook? He reached into the bag and pulled out the football boot box. He held it out to her. She would not uncross her arms to take it, so he laid it, like an offering to the gods, down on the top step at her feet.
"You know you've always been the love of my life."
It was true, and it was a shame.
"Here, this is for you."
He offered the bag of lager as he retreated backwards.
"Those days are gone," she said, coolly.
"Ah."
His lips pursed in admiration.
"How long has it been this time?"
"Long enough to matter."
He gave her a small round of applause.
"I thought I hadn't been hearing from you."
"So you came for a look at the ruins? Just to check?"
"Suppose you can't kid a kidder."
He held his palms up in admission.
"Can I no come in, Mrs. Bane?"
He wielded her name as softly as he could. She didn't say yes, and she didn't say no. She just turned and walked up the hallway into the kitchen. She heard the door close behind her, heard the key turn in the lock and the heavy footsteps of Shug at her back.
"I like what you've done with the place."
Shug sat down at the little folding table. He was studying the corner where the damp still peeled the paper from the wall. Agnes could see him looking at the fridge and the big freezer and wondering how she could afford any of it. Single parent with a raging drink problem. Without a word, she put the kettle on and opened the bread bin. From the paper wrapper, she took out two thick slices of white plain loaf and smeared thick yellow butter on them. She cut each in half and put it on a small tea plate. She slid the plate towards him, and he thanked her. He took up a buttery slice and crammed the edge into his mouth. The butter was sweet and thick.
"I hear Calf is enjoying South Africa."
"Catherine."
"So I hear." Agnes sounded tired.
"Do you know hear from her?"
he asked.
"Not often."
"Aye, well, you're to be a granny now."
Her hand grasped the edge of the worktop. The air blew out of her.
"So I heard."
"Wee Peggy Bain is flying out there, you know, to support her when the bairn comes. Times like this," he added cruelly, "you need your mammy, even if a mother-in-law is all you have."
"Where would I get the money for that?"
Agnes turned to hide her face from him. She tried to busy herself in making two mugs of dark tea. She hoped he wouldn't see how her hand was shaking.
"Donald Jr. is sure it's to be a boy. I tell him I'd buy the pram if he named it Hugh, after his favourite uncle."
When she could control the heat in her face, she turned and brought the stewed tea to the table. Into his, she spooned three sugars and added a big splash of milk.
"I was trying to cut back on the sugars, but what the hell?"
"Your scabby heart?"
"Aye. Still plays up from time to time. At least when it stutters, I know it's still there."
He laughed and finished off a slice of buttery bread, folding the crust and shoving it under his moustache in one piece.
"How's my boy? Is he anything like his old man?"
"Dear God, I should hope not."
Agnes got up from the table quietly and left the room. She wanted to process the news about Catherine in peace. She didn't say where she was going. Shug sat at the table and ate another slice of the buttered bread, and in his mind's eye, he tallied the cost of the new appliances in his head. "She has a man," he thought. He sat forward in the chair and craned his neck around the door to see if he could see her. Wiping his buttery fingers on his trousers, he wondered if she had slipped off into the bedroom. With a grin, he picked up the carryout and started around the unfamiliar house, looking for where she'd gone. Sticking his head round some of the half-open doors, he noted how neat and clean everything was. He thought about Joanie, her cat hair-covered couch, her dirty drawers in the bedroom floor, and he could picture her now, carelessly brushing toast crumbs off their mismatched bed covers. A Shug went slowly down the hall, peering into rooms. Her sad, glass-eyed ornament stared back at him. She wasn't in any of these rooms. He stopped outside one of the last doors before the front door and found her there with her back to him. It was a boy's room with two narrow single beds. On a low table by the door, Shuggy had placed some robot toys, and in the spaces between them, he had written out on neat little cards the names of those that were missing, ones that he didn't yet own. It reminded him of Agnes. He had forgotten how much she had wanted and wanted and wanted.
"Take a good look around," she said quietly. "And then go."
"Where are all the football posters?"
he asked, looking at the empty walls.
"Hugh doesn't like football.
Actually, he doesn't like posters much. He thinks they look common.
Shug looked to his son's side of the small, fussy room. The only sign of childhood was the neatly arranged robots. He looked at them and then realised what they were. They were a mantelpiece of sad, glass-eyed ornaments.
Seen enough?
Agnes seemed in that moment like a tired docent.
I suppose,
he sneered slightly.
Good,
said Agnes with a taut smile. She held her hand out towards the door.
Now you can fuck off.
Agnes was worried about her whites. All that summer the news was about Chernobyl and the nuclear explosion that had happened there. It had been a sad but distant worry until a man on the news warned about a light nuclear rain that was falling over the west of Scotland as it headed on to Ireland. As Shuggy helped her bring in the washing from the back line, she asked him whether nuclear fallout might actually help get out stubborn stains. The boy shook his head. No, it wouldn't be like a bleach. He told her about the depressing nuclear war cartoons they had been made to watch by Father Barry, and he said it might just eat the bedsheet whole. They had just carried in the last basket of still damp sheets when the smear started. From the front window, the bouncing drops looked like every other kind of Scottish spit. As it splashed off the empty street, they made a great game of things they would like to see burnt away by it.
Double football. Jinty McGlinchey. Dirty Mouse McAvenny. This whole bastarding scheme. Snap.
Shuggy lay in front of the three-bar fire and watched Agnes iron the last of the dampness out of the washing. The rising steam meant she had to keep wiping her face on an old piece of toilet roll she kept up her sleeve. She took out her top teeth and pulled funny faces at him through the hissing steam. It was unlike her to lower her vanity like this. But there, in the close heat of the fire, Shuggy dreamt of how he never wanted this burning rain to end. How it would be better if they were stuck inside alone, where he could keep her safe forever. Big Shug had tried to bring her low. Neither of them spoke about his father or his sudden visit. Despite him, Agnes and Shuggy had made a grand gesture of delivering all the special brew to Jinty. They dressed in their matching best and slowly promenaded around to the McClinchy's door. Jinty had opened the door with a confused frown covering a thin veneer of disdain. They smiled up at her as if they were the most faithful of Jehovah's Witnesses. Only upon seeing the plastic bag did Jinty herself soften. At the dull clang of the lager bells, she beamed in wonder like an apostle after the resurrection. Eugene had phoned on that very same day. Agnes had heard from him less and less since her first AA birthday. Since he was a good man, she expected he would let her down gradually, very gently, and then she would never hear from him again. Eugene called for her in the taxi. It looked shiny, as if it had been washed especially for the occasion. He honked the horn once, but when she went out into the street, he didn't get out and open the passenger door for her, as he had done the times before. Colleen and the other women were lined up against the wooden fence opposite. Bridie held a half-dry potato pot and a grey tea towel. They looked as if they had been interrupted from their routine by the growl of Eugene's diesel engine. Colleen looked livid as Agnes left with her prized possession. As the hackney pulled away, Eugene didn't speak. They had just passed the chapel when he pulled the taxi off the pit road and stopped it a few feet from the wide iron gateway of the closed colliery. He turned off the engine, and like a living beast, the taxi stopped shaking below them. It was pitch black and silent outside. He reached up and turned on the little yellow interior light. Agnes had been here a time before, with another taxi driver, a face she couldn't remember. It made her feel cold inside. She watched Eugene's kind eyes in the mirror. If she spoke first, it would be clumsy and hard-sounding, so she fumbled in her bag for her cigarettes and waited for him to say his piece and set the tone.
"I wasn't going to keep this going,"
he said quietly, without turning round in his seat.
"I suppose I got a fright.
I'm that scary."
"It was all the alcoholics and their disease."
Agnes closed the neck of her coat defensively.
"Well, don't worry yourself. It's not catching."
She heard his lips open and close, and then eventually he spoke again.
"I know it sounds stupid, right? It's just they people, the ones at your party. They were that, you know, pitiful."
She took the blow without a wince, and then she surprised herself.
"Eugene, you should know that they people, well, I am one of them."
His face moved in such a way that she knew this wasn't at all what he had wanted to hear.
"I didn't mean any offence. It's just that, well, you seem so normal."
That word again.
Agnes finished her cigarette and rolled her tongue around the inside of her teeth.
"Eugene, listen. No hard feelings, okay? Just please take me home."
He was quiet for a long time, and then he slid the partition between them closed. The taxi shuddered to life. The bright headlights picked out the broken gates of the mine. Red paint, already faded red. "No coal, no soul, only dole." The taxi swung out onto the road, but instead of the short distance back into the scheme, it turned in the direction of the main road, towards life. Agnes leaned forward and wrapped her ring on the partition, from curiosity more than annoyance.
"I asked you to take me home."
He didn't answer, and sinking back into her seat, she didn't push. The thought of getting out of the house for even a single hour had hung before her like a sweet dream since he had telephoned. They didn't go very far. The taxi reached the bright streetlights of the main road and took a left onto the carriageway. Almost as soon as it picked up speed to join the faster traffic, it slowed again and pulled off onto a dark gravel driveway. Agnes had seen the golfer's hotel before, but had never been inside. It sat on the side of the dual carriageway, and because it was accessible only by car, it said it didn't want the likes of her. From her seat on the bus, she would watch the Jaguars pull up, fancy cars from fancy estates, far away from here. She would watch the smooth-faced men take their golf clubs out of the car boots, while their wives would stand by, with their small purses and low heels, wrapped in Scottish woolen mill jumpers. It was true that the ring of green around Glasgow held the new slums of the urban resettlement, these forgotten, remote housing schemes. It seemed cruel to Agnes that these green fields also held some of the fanciest hotels and private clubs she had ever seen. The two different worlds didn't like to look on each other.
"We're not going here, are we?"
"I know,"
he said, pulling the fat black hack between two fancy saloon cars. Agnes gazed out at the garden lanterns leading the way to the white doors of the club.
"Would you look at it? It's not meant for the likes of us."
Eugene laughed.
"I'm offended by that."
The pride rose in her. Her hand pulled the hem of her skirt.
"Oh, Eugene, I can't. I'm not dressed for it."
Without saying any more, Eugene stepped out of the taxi and opened her door. He had to reach all the way into the back of the cab to take her hand. In his warm paw, hers was suddenly small and cold. She was proud, and she was frightened, and he was suddenly sorry for the words he had spoken before. The dining room of the golf club was simple, but to Agnes, it was the height of class. It was a big, open room that faced a wall of glass doors that overlooked the green lawn of the 18th hole. The room was carpeted in thick paisley carpet the colour of gold and parsley, and the walls had panelling laid in to waist height, and above this were photos of club members and famous patrons. Agnes didn't recognise any of them, and she didn't like to squint in front of strangers. A young girl, in a long tartan skirt, led them to a seat in the back of the smoking section. Agnes almost died with shame when Eugenia asked for a table nearer the glass doors and the lit fairway beyond. The girl only smiled and led them to a table closer to the front. As they sat down, Eugene said a loud hello to the tables on either side. The people politely nodded back. It had a fancy Gaelic name, but she recognised it as chicken. Agnes was going to have only this chicken and chips, but Eugene wouldn't let the waiter take the menus until she ordered a starter, a main, and a dessert. She would have liked to have sat alone with the menu for days. She didn't know what all the things were, but to suddenly see it all laid before her, and to know she could have her pick of it, made her feel lightheaded. It was like a Freeman's catalogue, only better. She ordered what she understood, and then she sat there worrying about the cost. "Listen, you have a wee drink if you want. Don't worry about me," she said, as the waiter brought them two fizzy colas. The glasses were tall, and each had a mixing stick meant for cocktails. "That's fancy, isn't it?" said Agnes, examining the stirrer and unable to relax. "Honestly, I don't mind if you take a wee drink." Their prawn cocktail starters arrived. The ice cream bowl was lined with a slice of lettuce and frozen pink prawns that swam in a sea of thick Mary Rose sauce. Around the edge of the glass were thick wedges of lemon. The prawns were still a little cold, not fully defrosted, which Eugene said wasn't very good of the place. Agnes didn't mind it. To her, it tasted fresh. The ice a clean, crisp stab against the sweet and tangy Mary Rose. "I've made this sauce before, but I've never thought about adding a lemon or the..." Eugene stopped her mid-sentence.
"I have to ask you about something."
Agnes set down her small fork.
"I don't mean to bring it up again," said Eugene, awkwardly. "It's just, I'm trying to understand, I suppose. But, well, have they people, you know, the people at the AA, told you when you would get better?"
The waiter had come and cleared their bowls before Agnes spoke again.
"I don't know what to tell you. They tell all of us that we will never get better. At least," she added, looking at him directly. "Not in the way you mean."
"But you know how you tell me you're a different person now? You tell me yourself that it was him that drove you to the drink. Well, all that's changed."
Eugene tried to soften his tone.
"If we make a go of this, don't you think that would keep you off it?"
"I don't think it works that way."
"Your arse. With me in your life, what would you need a drink problem for? Drink is only for these sad, pitiful bastards. Look at you now. Look at me, for fuck's sake."
The pastel-jumpered couple at the next table made a distasteful cough. Eugene lowered his voice again.
"Look, all I'm saying is, I like you. I think you're that fucking smashing."
Eugene was unwilling to admit defeat, and Agnes could imagine he was a man well used to being able to fix any object that was broken. It made her feel like an engine left corroding on a front lawn.
"Well, I like you too."
The waiter brought the main dishes. He wrapped his hands in a towel, a and gently slid the hot plates in front of the couple. Agnes looked first at her roasted chicken, and then she cooed over Eugene's lamb and boiled potatoes like a wain at Christmas. Eugene ignored the spread and pointed his thick finger in the direction of the coal mining estate.
"You are the best-looking woman in that whole scheme. Most of them don't even run a brush through their hair, and look at you. Any time of the day, you are spotless."
He leaned in.
"I just need to know. Afore I really fall for you. Afore we start something serious."
Agnes felt uneasy. She tried to change the subject back to the food.
"That looks lovely. Big portions, aren't they? I thought it would maybe be a breast or thigh, not a whole half chicken."
The waiter coughed and asked if they had everything they needed. Eugene nodded yes. Then on second thought, he added,
"Well, bring us a bottle of your house wine, would you?"
"Red or white, sir?"
asked the waiter quietly. Eugene looked at Agnes, who'd gone stiff. He looked back at the waiter.
"Would you have white with chicken?"
The waiter nodded that yes, he thought that would be a good idea. So Eugene ordered a bottle of the white.
"You don't have to, if you don't want to," said Eugene softly. "I'm no forcing you."
The chicken that had looked golden and juicy now looked dry and dead in front of her. The waiter brought the bottle of wine. He made to pour some for Agnes, and she didn't stop him. She remarked on how the wine was almost the light peach colour of the roses in her front garden.
"You know, peach roses are meant to be the colour of sincerity, the colour of gratitude."
The two of them sat looking at the glass for a long time. Eugene raised his and toasted the two of them.
"Here's to us, was like us, Guy Few and the raw deed."
Agnes raised a half smile and lifted her coke glass. It was flat and watery now.
"You never told me much about your daughter."
She pushed the chicken around the plate.
"Bernadette, is it?"
"Oh, she's all grown up now, I suppose. She does wonderful things for the nursery wains at St. Luke's. She's like her mother in that, and she was very close to her mammy when she was alive. They always did things together. Good things for the chapel. Charity work for the miners' widows."
He sucked some gristle from between his back teeth.
"But she can be at that stoop altogether too much. The pair of them were always at the fucking holy water, back and forth like it was a dipping sauce."
"She sounds like a good person, though."
Agnes said it, although knowing Colleen, she suspected otherwise.
"Have you told her about me?"
"No,"
said Eugene flatly.
"Oh."
She would have liked to have sounded less deflated.
"'Cause our Colleen did."
Agnes exhaled.
"I'll bet she painted a pretty picture."
Eugene let his eyes float over the untouched glass of wine.
"I suppose you could say that."
They finished their dishes and talked about taxis and snack bars, South Africa and its palladium mines. Agnes pushed her fat potatoes under the half-eaten carcass. The waiter cleared the plates and brought the tiramisu out to the table. Eugene drank the bottle of white down as her glass of peach-coloured wine sat untouched, getting warmer.
"I don't think I could eat another bite."
She was playing idly with a tiramisu.
"It's lovely, though. It's the best custard I've ever had."
"A wee whiskey would finish this off lovely," said Eugene, scooping the last of the pudding into his mouth.
"You know, I would never have thanked you for a whiskey. Not even on my worst days. Find it's like gin. Makes you sad. I didn't drink to get sad. I drank to get away from sadness."
"What did you drink then?"
"Ah, mostly only lager. And when I could afford it, a half bottle of vodka. On bad days, it put the fight back in me.
She paused.
It gives you the worst blackouts, though. Well, at least when you're drinking to get drunk.
I can hardly believe that you and her are the same person. He paused, then said, what do you think would happen if you took a drink of that wine then now?
I'd probably want more.
But maybe you wouldn't.
Maybe,
she said, then trying to be lighter.
Eugene, you don't have to get me drunk to have your wicked way with me.
Thank God for that. He swept his hand over the debris on the table. That would have been money down the drain, eh? He laughed, and his face grew pinker. Look, I'm not trying to get you drunk. I'm trying to have you try a drink.
But why?
Agnes was suddenly very tired.
Because it's what normal people do.
He moved the warm glass.
Look, just have a sip. To be social-like. You'll be fine.
Listen, if you start any trouble, I'll have them put you out and you can walk home. He pushed the glass towards her by its long, elegant stem.
You'll be fine. You're a different woman now.
Agnes took the glass in her hand and held the wine up to her nose. The glass was warm, and the wine smelled like sunshine.
I don't even really like wine that much, she said, pushing it away.
Oh, you're shitebag scared.
She was scared. She was terrified even. But she wouldn't let him see. She lifted the crystal glass to her mouth, and a small mouthful ran down her throat. It burned in a way she did not remember. The wine tasted nothing like sunshine. It was bitter, like cooking apples and vinegar.
See?
She said, putting the glass down.
Do you see?
Said Eugene, genuinely excited. He looked like he might rise to his feet.
You haven't burst into flames. You haven't grown another head.
He lifted the dregs of his glass and swung it towards her in salute.
Cheers. I'm not proud of you. I knew what my sister said wasn't true.
He was right. She didn't feel any different.
Colleen was wrong.
Agnes felt a wave of relief. She slowly finished the glass of wine, hoping what he said about her was true, feeling like she had beaten the AA and that she could be normal again. When the bill came, he paid in small notes, tightly curled from his nights out taxi driving. When they left the table, Agnes felt warm on the inside, and Eugene led her into the small members bar. Eugene laced his thick arm around her middle, and she felt happy that people were looking at them admiringly. As they sat close to one another in the corner, Eugene kissed her earlobe, and Agnes ordered a vodka and tonic, and then she ordered another, and then another. The taxi swerved back into the dark scheme. It was only good fortune that there were no other cars on the road. Agnes slipped around in the back seat, rolling in and out of a stupor. Eugene pulled the taxi over into the mouth of the closed colliery again. In the dark, they tried to fuck, but it was clumsy and painful, and it made her rigid with a dark memory she couldn't quite remember. As Eugene fumbled on top of her, coins spilt out of his pockets and made her feel as if she were being paid for. By the time Agnes had managed to scrape her house key into the door lock, the lights were already on in the hall. As she fell on the front door, she felt her mohair coat catch in the jagged Artex plaster and heard her tights rip in its hooked spines. She was sure she was smiling up at Leek, so she didn't know why her son would be so angry, why he was screaming down at her. All she understood was he was hitting Eugene square in his thick neck with his fists. All she remembered was that another bedroom door opened, and there in the doorway was the little boy with the worried face of his own granny. His face was wet with disappointment. The front of his pajamas was dark through with piss. Chapter 23. Christmas came and went, and Agnes started her New Year's celebrations early. By the time it had gotten dark in Hogmanay, she had done away with the surreptitious pouring of vodka, half hidden out of view down the far side of her armchair. By the time the television started preparing for the festivities, she was opening cans of special brew with a triumphant hiss and crack and pouring them like waterfalls straight into her old tea mug. It was still hours until the Hogmanay bells, and she was already listing all the men who had ruined her. If Agnes had noticed that Leek was slowly disappearing, she didn't see. Leek had spent his Christmas week hiding inside sleep. At night, he hitchhiked to the city and played his apprenticeship wages away in the puggy machines that lined the arcades under Central Station. He disappeared earlier than usual on Hogmanay, like a man who sees rain coming and tries to outrun it. Shuggy stayed home, turning a drunk Agnes from the front door, keeping her away from the telephone. On Hogmanay, he sat by the window watching the Christmas tree lights come on in the other front rooms as he pushed handfuls of white net curtains into his mouth. He stuffed them in until his mouth was full and he was less hungry than before. He soiled her good curtains in front of her and longed for her to tell him to stop. But she didn't. While the McAvennies played with new bikes and enjoyed a visit from Big Jamesy, Shuggy sat by her feet like a quiet shadow. He watched without talking while she drank from the bottomless tea mug. She told him bad stories of his father again, picking up the tale like it was a book she had only set to the side for a year. By the time the 6 o'clock news was finished, she was sitting on her bed slurring into the phone to Jinty McGlinchey. Shuggy slid quietly along the hallway and sat with his back pressed against her bedroom door. From there, he could listen through the chipboard and could follow the bell curve of her worsening mood. He wondered how long it would be till she passed out, till he could have a rest. There was music coming from her cassette player, and he could tell it was a bad sign. He slipped into the bedroom like a wary ghost. Agnes was smoking, dressed in nothing but her sheer black stockings and her black lace bra. Shuggy often bought new tights for her. Pride wouldn't let her leave the house in a laddered pair, so the boy learned the exact size and shade she liked. Pretty Polly, jet black, semi-sheer tights were in all of his memories of her, both happy and sad. On her dark days, like today, the tights looked dirty and bad to him. They stood in contrast to her rose-coloured flesh and drew attention to the fact that she should have been dressed decently, like other mammies were. The tights left pink lines across the soft fat of her belly, where they pinched her skin. It seemed like something other people should not be able to see. He wanted her to cover it. She had forgotten he was home. When she finally noticed him in the mirror, she smiled that glassy smile she did with her teeth closed. Reaching deep into her black leather bag, she produced a single 50-pence piece.
"Look at the state of you," she said. "How can we celebrate the bells with you still in your pyjamas?"
She gave him the coin and told him to fill a bath. He didn't like to leave her like this. He could see she wasn't at home in her own body. She circled her arms around his waist, drew him to her and placed a kiss on his lips. He could feel the heat of her breath, her lips slightly parted and lifeless.
"Clean yourself good now," she warned. "I want to start this year right."
When the bathtub was half full of lukewarm water, Shuggy cautiously slid in. He worked the soap into his scalp and lay in the bath, listening to her shuffle from hiding place to hiding place, looking for the alcohol she had hidden from him and had now forgotten. He took out the little red football book that Eugene had given him and began to memorise all the teams and results of every match of the previous year's Premier Division. He was penitent with these Hail Marys, going over and over the meaningless scores till he had committed them to memory. It would be a new year, a new chance. His Hogmanay outfit lay in our bed. It was the monochrome gangster getup, the black shirt and the white tie. As they got dressed together in silence, they looked like an unhappy married couple who were headed to a very special party. He held his mother for balance and helped her pull on her skirt.
"Let's have a look at you then."
She took a painted finger and slid it down his nose.
"Look how handsome you are."
She shook her head in reverie.
"Not a bit like your fat bastard of a father."
Agnes peeled off a can of warm special brew from its plastic noose. She looked at it lovingly and slid it solemnly into the boy's hands.
"Here, take this to Colleen's. Wish her a happy new year from me and make sure she gets to drinking how smart you look."
A bitter smile cracked over her lips. "Be sure and tell your Auntie Colleen a happy new year from me and Eugene, eh?" Every house in the street had its Christmas tree lit and proudly glowing in the front window. Dark-haired boys flitted down the street with bits of coal, excited and early to start the first footing. Shuggy took the short walk to Colleen's house at a slow pace. He travelled along the wooden fences that hemmed the thick white-berried council bushes. He had no intention of passing on the can of drink or his mother's message. As he crossed the street, he wondered what people were eating. He imagined them huddled together with full bellies, shut in from the cold. He stood outside Colleen's house, squeezing winter berries between his fingers, and thought about the steak and butter sandwiches sober Agnes had made for the Bells the year before. He thought about the way they had cuddled on the settee and eaten peppermint chocolate, watching the crowd in George Square bring in the Bells with a song. Shuggy wondered what to do with a can of lager. He hunkered in the darkness by Colleen's low coal shed and pulled the ring pull. It sliced away from the can with a yeasty hiss, and the familiar smell was heavy in the cold air. With a cautious tongue, Shuggy licked the brew from the top of the can. The foam tasted harmless, fluffy, like bitter air, a little sour and metallic, like wrapping his lips around the cold kitchen tap. His belly stabbed with hunger and anticipation, and asked to be filled for a little taste of anything. Crouching like an animal, he turned his back to the street and drank a small mouthful of the lager. It didn't burn. It tasted like flat ginger with a side of heavy-seeded bread. He took another sip and another, and the grumbling in his belly grew quieter. He was glad of the warmth of it, and the way it made his heart feel dizzy. The hunger started to subside, and he was feeling a little lighter when he heard a diesel engine draw up. He watched Agnes stumble down the uneven paving of the path, clutching her purple coat closed over her short skirt. She said something flirtatious to the driver and climbed gracelessly into the back of the Hackney. The driver wore thick government glasses. It clearly wasn't Eugene. Shuggy panicked as the taxi pulled out of Pit Head. In the 4 months and 13 days since Eugene had helped his mother back on the drink, the red-headed taxi driver had come by two or three times a week. Those mornings, Shuggy listened for Leek to leave for his apprenticeship, and a few minutes later, Eugene would slip into the quiet house. Shuggy could set the television meter by it. Since that night at the golfer's clubhouse, Eugene had had the good sense to avoid Leek. As Agnes had lain singing to herself on the hall carpet, Leek had howled, and in his boxer shorts, he had huckled Eugene out of the hallway and into the street. Although Eugene could have easily resisted, his manners were such that he let himself be manhandled out the door and found himself apologising all the way to the curb. That night, Eugene had been sleepless with guilt. Early the next morning, away from his daughter's scowl, he had pulled the telephone from the hallway and snuck with it into the bathroom, locking the door. He had woken Agnes,